My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, glad you're with us. Loaded, I mean loaded up today. Glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. Well, some of the caravan have made it to our southern border. We have the video we'll show you tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern on Fox. But more importantly, it's worse than that. More information about, I'm loving, and I can't help it. It's actually entertaining. You got a Democratic, it's like the radical left versus the radical left, and they're like killing each other, and it's pretty entertaining to watch. How to counter what they're planning to do in the House? You know, there's a great saying: if somebody is gonna commit political suicide, your opponent, just let them do it. It's not gonna work. I'll tell you why as the program unfolds today. We have all of that we have to get to. We have so much on Florida on the recount issue. We did get an opinion back, as I predicted, as Greg Jarrett predicted, as so many so-called great lawyers on, you know, these liberal networks did not predict that, oh, this is unconstitutional and illegal. It's amazing how little they know about the Constitution, the rule of law. The law is clear on these issues. There's no ambiguity in the law. And anyway, we got an opinion from the DOJ Office of Legal Counsel backing President Trump's appointment of Matt Whitaker as the acting attorney general. That was never in doubt. We also have, which is some fascinating poll numbers. I mean, except it seems the analysis of them, even by the pollsters that are doing it, is so far from what reality is. I'm like, what universe are you people living in? So I'll hit that today and much, much more. Let me start with Florida because there's a lot happening here. We've got a story out. Well, first we had Marco Rubio on Hannity last night. And he really, I thought, gave a great analogy. And in a series of also tweets that he put out, he's really, I think, hit the nail on the head in all of this. And he's saying that what the Democratic lawyers are actually asking a judge is to change Florida election laws after the election in order to steal the Senate and the governor's seats. But it's actually more than that. And Dan Bongino will talk about the commissioner of agriculture. The one person won that race. That has flipped. Now we'll see. And by the way, they can't even do a recount in Palm Beach County. Apparently their machines overheated. How does this go on from 2000? After everything we went through in 2000, you know, scattered, smothered, and covered. If you don't know what that is, you've never eaten at the greatest restaurant ever. It's called Waffle House. Actually, Linda, we dragged you to a Waffle House for the first time. That was your first experience, wasn't it?
It sure was.
Now, Linda only drinks things that are disgustingly green, have kale in it, or the most disgusting orange soup, whatever that thing is that you're usually pouring down your, whatever.
I don't think everyone thinks it's disgusting.
It is so gross. I look at it. I'm like, you're going to eat that? Everything you eat, it's the same thing.
Well, I'm going to live for, you know, a very long time, and you're going to die in the woods.
I've already given up any hope of a long life. You know, I've just adopted the whatever's going to happen. I'd work out like an animal, but, you know, I do it because I like it. I don't know if that's going to...
I work out like an animal, too. I just eat healthy and fill my body with protein.
Well, I don't eat... I try not to eat a lot. I don't overeat. I do eat salad, which I hate, but I eat it. A Greek salad is... I actually like that the best with feta cheese, so that's fine.
I don't think cheese and iceberg lettuce qualifies as a salad.
I eat a lot of protein. I eat meat. vegetables, and I'm really good, except when I get pasta in front of me, God help me, because that's my favorite dish of all time, and I can't ever eat it because just you get bloated and
what
heavy.
What is it,
and
spaghetti and meatballs or lasagna?
I like it all.
There's anything nothing, with pasta, huh?
Anything with pasta, anything. All right, let me get back to the show. So you have it, but so Rubio goes on, he goes, imagine if an NFL team is trailing 24-22, and in the final 3 seconds, they hit a field goal, the three-point kick to win the game. Then after the game, it's kind of funny, but it's true. And, you know, on the serious side of this, it's not funny because we're talking about the rule of law. I mean, how many times do I have to go through the list of laws broken here and not abided by, and the trouble that has existed only in two counties? It always goes back to Broward, always goes back to Palm Beach County, the most liberal Democratic counties of the 67 in Florida. Those two counties, 2000, 2004, 2012, 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18, all problems. Broward County, I mean, it's unbelievable. But imagine you kick the three-pointer to win, you're trailing 24-22, and then after the game, some lawyer is arguing for the losing team to get a judge to order the rules be changed so that the second field goal is only worth 1 point, meaning you'd lose 24-23 instead of winning 25-24. He said, well, that's how the Democratic lawyers plan to steal the Florida election. And for example, he goes on, Florida law requires voter signatures on mail ballots that they match the signature of the voter. But Democratic lawyers are now asking a judge to throw that law out and force Florida to count ballots with signatures that don't match the voter signature on file. That's a little scary, but that is where we are, unfortunately. Politico has a story today that we've got to pay a lot of attention to, because it looks like the fake fraudulent media that claims to be fair never is. And there is a line with the Democrats and hoping the Democrats win. They're as invested as anybody else. And we saw that in the lead up to the election. But the Florida Department of State last week is asking federal prosecutors to investigate the dates that were changed on official state election documents. The first voting irregularities it is flagged in the wake of the 2018 elections. Now, remember, Pam Bondi was on last night on TV. Marco Rubio was on. Now we have a criminal investigation ongoing. I'm not going to anticipate what's going to come out of that. I'm just saying it seems if you're just finding 80,000 votes, it does need to be investigated because every Floridian, it's about the integrity of the entire election. Because I just don't believe mathematically what has happened here is possible. I just don't. I don't think it's incompetence. It's just none of it meets the smell test to me. Anyway, the concerns, back to Politico, which department says can be tied to the Florida Democratic Party, center around date changes on forms used to fix vote-by-mail ballots sent with incorrect or missing information, known as what they call cure affidavits. In other words, documents used to fix mail ballots were due no later than 5 p.m. on November 5th, the day before the election. But affidavits released on Tuesday by the DOS show that the documents from four different counties said the ballots could be returned by 5 p.m. on Thursday, which is not accurate. And DOS officials have repeatedly told the media that the monitors that they sent to Broward County saw no election fraud. It wasn't until Tuesday that the office revealed publicly that it had turned over information to federal prosecutors. By the way, I am hearing, these are Hannity sources, that there's a lot of stuff being handed over to prosecutors in now this criminal investigation. I mean, a lot. Now, the records released by the DOS, which is part of Governor Scott's administration, point the finger at the Florida Democratic Party. This is Politico. This is not Hannity. And political parties can get a daily list of who had their mail-in ballots rejected, and political parties or anyone else can also get publicly available cure affidavits and send them to voters who had mail-in ballots rejected and encourage them to fix their ballots. Anyway, in an email chain released by the Department of State's Tuesday document dump, you have the Citrus County Supervisor of Elections, woman by the name of Susan Gill, last week telling DOS officials that a voter who received one of the cure affidavits with the wrong date had also received a call from a number identified as the Tallahassee office of the Florida Democratic Party, and an indication the party was reaching out about her vote by mail ballot. When I called it, it's the Democratic Party of Florida, she said in an email to DOS officials. She went on to write that she thinks that the incorrect date was used because whoever sent the cure affidavit mixed up the deadline for cure affidavits with the deadline for provisional ballots. But she said a bigger problem is the fact that they actually changed one of the DOE forms. Whoopsie daisies. And that change to an official election form was what state officials turned over to federal prosecutors. And another email included the DOS document dump, including correspondence with another county supervisor of elections, a guy by the name of Paul Lux, Okaloosa, I think is how you pronounce the county, who said that he believed the affidavits were from the Florida Democratic Party. So they got that information coming out. Now, you know, when Matt Gaetz has been warning that the Democrats, you know, antics here, and Rush, we played this on Hannity last night, apparently it said on his program, and it makes sense to me, it's a dry run for 2020. And that they're stress testing the integrity of the U.S. election system and in the hopes that they want to defeat Trump in the end. Nothing would surprise me. But anyway, that's now we have more shenanigans in Palm Beach County because they came up with a new excuse last night as to why they can't follow the Florida law that requires vote totals be submitted by tomorrow. And the county's old counting machines, apparently, they say, overheated and gave incorrect totals, forcing the county to restart their recount of about 175,000 early votes, according to their supervisor of elections. And the department has flown in mechanics to repair the machines. What's their, what is their political affiliation? Anyway, they said on Monday that they're not going to be able to meet the 3 p.m. Thursday deadline imposed by the state. And on Saturday, state officials said Florida's 67 counties had to recount the more than 8 million ballots cast. That's for U.S. Senate, governor, agriculture commissioner, et cetera. And the case for the deadline extension for Palm Beach was moved to federal court yesterday following the motion by the attorneys, et cetera, et cetera. Now, here's something that ought to scare you. And this was in the Federalist. And I saw their reporting this morning, and it's pretty interesting. According to the election data recorded by Real Clear Politics over the years, Democrats have won 75% of any races where the margin of victory was close. That's a pretty good percentage. You would think by now Republicans would be prepared, and there's no evidence in my mind that they were for what would happen down in Florida. All right, we've got that. We're going to start getting a flood of news about the deep state. We could be now approaching the runway as it relates to the landing and ending of this Mueller investigation. There's evidence of that happening. A lot of reports out there that the president has or will respond in writing to questions submitted by Mueller, but only about what's happening with what happened with so-called collusion. We've got some of the caravan reaching the border, sitting on top of fences. And now we have General Mattis and Secretary Nielsen down by the border. We'll get to all that today. And, well, whoops, so much more. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. Whatever reason, whenever you have a statewide race, I mean, this is pretty amazing when you look at it. This is the Associated Press, Federalist. I saw this article. Just fascinating. When you have a statewide race decided by less than 1 point, well, you would think that it would be around 50-50, 55-45, 60-40, 1 point. No. These are the races that are decided after election night by counting absentee ballots, provisional ballots, recounts, whatever they're now seeing. You know, it's you look at the numbers and what do you see? 75% of those statewide races where the margin was 1% or less, well, looks like, well, the Democrats win every single time. All right, we'll have a lot on this as the program unfolds. We've got other big stories we're following today. One, now we have the caravan migrants, many of them making it to Tijuana, the first wave from Central America. And the images, which we'll show you tonight on Hannity, I mean, they're on top of the fences as they arrive at the U.S. border. Defense Secretary Mattis has been down there. Secretary Nielsen has been down there. Fox 5 San Diego is reporting, you know, that some have been crawling through openings in the fence, then running back to the Mexican side of the border when Border Patrol agents start approaching. Border Patrol releasing a statement that said that they believe some at the fence are members who were traveling as part of the caravan that originated in Honduras. We'll get to that. Also, the Mueller probe was about to heat up big time. We'll give you the latest details on that. Also, Michael Caputo weighs in. We have the latest on your fake news left-wing media that we will be talking about. And, Robert De Niro's lost his mind. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. All right, so saw this on the first thing in the news this morning, the first wave of migrants from Central America, the caravan. Apparently they got rides somehow, according to some of the reporting. Anyway, and you see many of them. I actually think it's a great skill. I don't know how they actually got to the top of the border wall, which is pretty high. It seemed like a difficult obstacle to be able to climb, but they were able to do it, or at least many were. And then, of course, people climbing the fence sat on top of it. Others jumped and crawled through openings in the fence, running back to the Mexico side when U.S. Border Patrol agents approached. According to Fox 5 San Diego, Border Patrol releasing a statement, they believe that these were members of the part of the travel, part of the migrant caravan that originated in Honduras. Anyway, they reached the border fence in that area. Right near on the border with Tijuana. They literally now are there and, you know, what's going to happen? Now, it's been amazing to watch liberal commentary about a lot of different things. And one of the things I watched as well, Fox and the president used this caravan fear for election purposes. No, that wasn't it at all. I mean, what was the idea if you have, and there were many varying estimates, 7,000, 14,000, 10,000, 11,000. I've heard all sorts of, it's a big caravan. We've heard at different points, some have turned back. There was one report from Mexico that said that some criminal elements had actually mixed in with those seeking asylum for legitimate purposes. Even if we assume 99% just want to come here, have a better life, etc. We have laws in this country. We are a constitutional republic. We have American sovereignty. We have borders. And we saw what happened at the southern border of Mexico, when the fences were knocked down and people just charged across the border into Mexico. And at that point, nobody in Mexico was able to or had the desire to stop them from coming into the country. One of the things I have said, if we had a border wall, this would be of no concern. To not deal with it early on and prepare for any potential similar situation evolving would be negligent, I think, on our part. Because if you assume that the majority of people, which, look, I haven't been to the border so often, and having witnessed up close and personal, I'll give San Diego as one example, that I'm on one side of the border, I can see right across the other side of the border, there's poverty. Like, I mean, horrible poverty. You know, there's no opportunity. You know that then on the San Diego side, you've got $1 million, $500,000 homes and above. And I think if I'm on the side where I can't get a job and there's no economic activity and things aren't no opportunities for my family or my future or my kids and their future, I'm going to look over at that beautiful country on the other side of the fence and say, I want to go there. But the problem is, America, what if we let this happen where you have thousands of people arriving at the border and what we saw at the southern border of Mexico unfold here? That's not good for anybody, because the president's determined to that people respect our laws and sovereignty. And of course, there was some 300 people identified within the caravan that don't have our best interest at heart and have backgrounds and records that would concern the American people and our security and our safety. But the thing is, if you have the wall up, there's no confrontation. There's no issue. There's no problem. And it would force people to go through the process legally. When you talk about a wall and you talk about a door within the wall, well, the door means then you're going to have to follow the process that so many others, millions of others, have followed to get into the United States of America. Now there's going to be a big fight in Congress. The big fight in Congress is going to be, well, how much money will they appropriate this year in this lame duck session? Now, Richard Shelby is the Senate Appropriations Committee chairman, told the Washington Examiner today when asked about funding the wall, as lawmakers now are returning for this lame duck session. We ought to try to resolve it, he said. I'm going to meet with the president and with Mitch McConnell. McConnell said that he plans on seeking $5 billion for the wall. So far, we've spent about $3.5 billion, and Shelby had appropriated another $1.6 billion for fiscal year 2019. Democrats, I doubt, are going to want to fund any of this in any way, shape, manner, or form, although apparently Kristen Sinema is saying that she would work with Republicans on the wall. We'll see how that all works out in the end. My guess is that in the end, Democrats have a great track record of staying together as a group. So I think it's just yet to be determined what's going to happen. In other news today, we have the Department of Justice. I've been complaining a little bit. I've been watching really closely all of these, you know, liberal channels, lawyers, people that, you know, have all of, you know, these degrees. And I'm like, read the law. We've cited the law repeatedly on the program. This is a no-brainer. Their argument, Matt Whitaker, it couldn't be appointed to the position to take over for Jeff Sessions. Well, it turns out the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel issued their opinion and, in fact, backed the president's appointment of Whitaker as the acting attorney general. And if Rod Rosenstein, who is conflicted, and actually really involved in the case, because he recommended that Comey be fired, he signed the fourth and final FISA warrant against Carter Page, bulk of information, of course, coming from the Russian dossier that Clinton bought and paid for, and that was the third renewal warrant. And there's talk now that Rod Rosenstein might actually have to testify in this lame duck session before Congress, but he's been able to duck and dodge that in the past, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, so the memorandum as it relates for Emmett Flood, the counsel to the president, designating an act by an attorney general, it is the exact law that was cited by our own Greg Jarrett, our friend, and it's 100% accurate, and it is the Vacancies Reform Act. I won't bother you with all the details of it. The reason Democrats are so up in arms, because Whitaker is now taking over the position because he's not conflicted like Rod Rosenstein. He has not recused himself like Jeff Sessions. He has publicly said things about what he thinks about the Mueller probe, that it has gone beyond its mandate, among other things. And now the question is this going to be a real attorney general that is maybe going to investigate all the things that we've been exposing? Democrats have been talking an awful lot about they want investigations. All right, well, we can investigate whether or not There was an exoneration of Hillary Clinton before an investigation, because there appears to be evidence that would support that. Because they were writing the exoneration before they ever interviewed Hillary or 17 other key witnesses. Then we can get into whether or not there is a violation of having a server in a mom and pop shop bathroom closet, and whether or not when you have classified top secret special access programming information, well, we've gone over extensively on this program about the Espionage Act and how that would be illegal. That would also be a question for James Comey and the leak that he had to his friend, the Columbia professor, that gave it to the New York Times that ended up for the purpose of getting a special counsel appointed. And then while we're at it, we might want to look into some real Russia, quote, collusion, and that would be the Hillary bought and paid for dossier with money that was appropriated and funneled through a law firm, I assume labeled as a legal expense, considering all the financial issues that Robert Mueller has brought up as it relates to Manafort, Cohn, and others. Then maybe we'll find out if that money was then, which we know was then handed over to Perkins Coie, an op research firm, which resulted in the hiring of Christopher Steele, a foreign national. But foreign nationals aren't supposed to influence our elections, so we have been told. And then, of course, the dossier, which was full of lies and misinformation and propaganda, and how that information, the bulk of which became the basis for FISA warrant applications against Carter Page, some four of them. And it was, if that's the bulk of information, then I would argue that an investigation could be made into whether or not a fraud was committed upon the court, the FISA court judges that were overseeing that case, whether or not the unverified, uncorroborated dossier was in fact also used to propagate lies to the American people in the lead up to the 2016 election. That would be election interference. That would be purposefully disseminating propaganda materials to the American people. Then we could find out to the extent that maybe through circular reporting that that could have been used as a strategy to get Mueller appointed in the first place, kind of what Comey's goal was. We know we have 25 people between the Department of Justice and the upper echelon, not rank and file, FBI guys, most of whom I know that are just aghast at what happened at the top levels. But we know that all of those guys that, you know, well, we have how many fired and how many resigned and demoted and now how many criminal investigations are ongoing. So that's an interesting thing, too. So we'll find out. On other matters, you know, this is pretty interesting to me. We have a majority of swing state voters support the president's immigration agenda. Wonder, that's why the Center for American Progress and John Podesta don't talk about immigration. You know, everybody's talking about, well, Donald Trump, well, this was not a blue wave. You want to talk about a red wave? 1994. Bill Clinton's first midterm, he lost 8 Senate seats, lost 52 House seats, lost. First time in 40 years, Republicans in power, won. Obama's even worse in his first midterm, 2010, 6 Senate seats, lost. 63 House seats, lost. I'm looking at a poll by Monmouth University Polling, and I don't want to get too deep into the poll because I don't really agree with some of their analysis of the poll, but, you know, that's up for dispute, discussion, how you interpret these things. And the president's approval rating has stayed consistent throughout March of 2017 to where it is now. As a matter of fact, he's still at his high water mark. He's at one of his lowest numbers in terms of disapproval. Congress, well, they've been vacillating between 17 and 23% approval rating. Now, when you think of that in the context of what the election results said, well, Republicans had 44 people resign or retire in the House. That makes it hard because you have all these no-name, have no clue how to campaign Republicans running. And then the Republicans also brought a lot of this on themselves. A lot of people are angry with them. Why? They didn't repeal and replace Obamacare as they promised. We got close. John McCain was the final vote against. We know what happened. We know the history. But they did get the biggest tax cuts. We did get rid of all those regulations. We see an economic boom, especially when you compare the economy now to what it was under Barack Obama. Things are a lot better. It's just going to be very interesting to watch all this. Now, all these people that have made, people now want to make a decision what 2020 is going to be like. I'm telling you right now, don't waste your time. Because what happens between now and the next 2 years and November 2020 is going to be profound. Democrats, if they follow through on their stated agenda, and that is if they misinterpret how the election results. Remember, Trump picked up 3 Senate seats here. Clinton lost 8. Obama lost 6. Clinton lost 52 House seats, and Obama lost 63. I mean, if they overreach, which I can guarantee you they're going to do, it will have a massive impact on 2020. But we'll see. The best thing they could do would be to work to make the country continue the economic growth, make the country better. Want to know why Bill Clinton got reelected? Because he worked with Newt Gingrich. Gingrich pressured him to follow his agenda, and the American people benefited. All right, a lot to get to. Dan Bongino, we're going to go back to Florida when we get back and what's going on down there. Darrell Issa, I feel so bad for the people of California. I mean, this is really bad. Wall Street Journal confirming what our own Joe Bastardi said yesterday about, you know, we got 130 million dead trees in Florida and California, not allowed to cut them down. You know, I just want to save lives first, and then we'll discuss, you know, what we need to do to prevent this from ever happening again. Billions of dollars in destruction, lives lost, 50 lives, people missing. It's scary. All right, Dan Bongino at the top of the hour. I love, so Amazon, one of the places they picked down, they're going to move to New York City or Long Island City. They're getting $1.28 billion from the city, $1.71 billion from the state. Yeah, there's projected tax revenue increases, 25,000 jobs. What about every other company, though?
I believe the law hasn't been followed from the beginning. You know, those early votes, the last time they were cast was the Sunday before the election. By law, those are supposed to be downloaded and sent to the state by 7:30 p.m. on the night of the election. And then you have to process the absentee ballots, the mail ballots that had come in before that time. And then there's always some that come in Monday and Tuesday before the election. Those should be shortly thereafter. They didn't follow any of that. There's always additional votes added to every county because people are voting from overseas or because you haven't fully processed all the ones that you had by 7:30, but you're supposed to update that every 45 minutes. They didn't do that. We know, for example, that as part of Broward County's vote count, it includes at least 19 people who were disqualified from voting by their own canvassing board, who they only took the ballots to after being forced, after being caught, and we don't know how many others that may have happened in. And now we know they didn't start the recount, the machine recount, until this morning. After everybody else started Saturday or Sunday, Miami-Dade is almost done. So it's irregular. Irregularity after irregularity. And as far as stealing is concerned, let me just make this one point on that. That's what election lawyers are not coming to Florida to make sure every vote is counted. The reason why election lawyers get involved is to make sure as many votes as possible for their client is counted and as many votes as possible for their opponent is disqualified. And when you have an election office this incompetent and this law breaking, it creates enormous opportunity for those sorts of arguments to be made. And suddenly the election's decided by a judge or by lawyers, not by voters the way they're supposed to be.
Will you get your counting done on time? The Thursday deadline you have, the Friday deadline with military and out-of-country ballots after it. Will you be ready on Thursday?
Absolutely. My team and I are working very hard, very diligently to make sure that that happens.
So you're saying 100% you'll have the count done to everybody's satisfaction?
I'm saying 100%. We All have right. a staff that's highly trained, they're capable, they're competent. And we've set the goal of making sure that all of our information is in according to the schedule.
All right. That was Brenda Snipes saying, yeah, we're going to get it in. We're 100% confident the recount will be done by the Thursday deadline, which was extended. It was supposed to be tomorrow. And we don't even know on a lot of these things what that means. And then the problems that we had in Palm Beach County last night, which, of course, is the machines don't work. You know, it's the most amazing thing here is the history. It keeps happening, but not anywhere else but Broward and Palm Beach. And Palm Beach's machines overheated. How do they overheat? And to think this really goes back to 2000. That in this day and age of technology, in this day and age, knowing we have problems that we just don't fix is insane. Anyway, Dan Bongino joins us, and he, of course, the author of the bestseller Spygate. And, you know, I'm watching what you have been saying about this, and you have a different take maybe than everybody else. And, for example, when we look at the Commissioner of Agriculture seat, there was a 5,000 vote margin win, and that now has been overturned, as opposed to, say, DeSantis is up, 36,000, and Rick Scott that's up by 12,000.
Yeah, Sean, the Agriculture Commission was up by 40,000. He's now down by 5,000.
Right.
So this race has already been potentially stolen. Now, here's why this matters. Yes, absolutely, point stipulated, the Senate race between Nelson and Scott is critical. The Democrats would fleece that if they could. The governor's race is critical, too. They would steal that if they could. I've been making the argument, though, that they are keeping the attention on those two races because they've already stolen the agriculture commissioner race. Now, why does this matter, Sean? Your listeners may be like, well, why would anybody care about an agriculture commissioner race in Florida? Because this is all about your Second Amendment. Florida, Sean, unlike a lot of other states, the issuance of concealed carry permits is controlled by the Agriculture Commissioner. It's a long story why. It's an elected position. It used to be under the Secretary of State, which is now appointed. They didn't want that. A lot of gun rights groups, for good reason, wanted voter control over the issue. But Matt Caldwell, the Republican, was up by 40,000. He went to sleep. And he finds out he's losing by 5,000 to a big-time anti-Second Amendment advocate named Nikki Fried. And Sean, 80,000 votes just seem to magically appear. One more thing on it. Caldwell appeared on Fox and Friends this morning, and he said it right. He said, listen, I'm not looking to win by any kind of fraud. I just want an honest vote count. If I lost fair and square, I lost fair and square. But where the heck did these 80,000 magic votes come from? This race, this is a debacle down here.
It's a total debacle. But to what extent, though? I mean, you got the Florida legislature. They would obviously be able to weigh in if there was any extreme move on. Look, the people of Florida like a couple of things. One is they do support the Second Amendment universally. And secondly, they love the fact that they are a no property tax state. One of the few in the country, and I think that was one of the big reasons why Ron DeSantis beat Andrew Gillum in spite of Andrew Gillum was like, there were three stars, Stacey Abrams, Andrew Gillum, and Bozo in Texas, where millions and millions and millions outside money poured in, and those were the races they wanted to win badly. But the 40% business tax, I think it blew Floridians away as close as the race was. I mean, look, there were a lot of headwinds, as I pointed out many times, between Senate and House. Obama lost, 69 seats altogether, Clinton 60 seats in their first midterms. By any measure, Trump winning three seats in the Senate is a massive win for Republicans when you compare it historically, and it's only happened three times where in a first midterm a president picks up Senate seats. So it's just fascinating. I just don't know. I don't have confidence. I don't know why. I just don't trust these people. I don't know what they've done. There's been no following the votes. Nobody knows anything. They just keep showing up.
Well, a couple of things. First, on your first question, yes, you're right. The Agriculture Commissioner can't change any gun laws. If Nikki Fried wins, she's not in the legislature. But, Sean, they control the issuance of the permits. And remember this, as Tom Fitness, your dishwasher, always said, process, Sean, is punishment. If you control the process and you slow it down dramatically enough, that is the punishment. You don't have to change the gun laws. You just throw a wrench in the whole machinery of it and you slow it down. But secondly, yes, you nailed it. The issue in Florida is they ran way too progressive of a candidate, even in what should have been, according to historical midterm standards, a tidal wave election for Democrats. They lost. I'm going to say they lost handily. Gillum lost by a squeaker. but he still lost. And that tax issue, which you're, I mean, you know, Florida, you've been down here a lot. The tax issue down here is sacred. Nobody wants to even hear about tax hikes. People move down here from the Northeast to get away from it. So, yeah, the Florida issue matters. And I think the Democrats are starting to figure out that running Stacey Abrams, Gillum, Beto type candidates in red states, you know, they may get you moral victories, but as for actual victories, you're going to take a back seat on that.
All right, let's move a little bit further into this, because at this point, I assume there's no more votes that they're finding, correct? Are we at least do we have that buttoned up by this point?
Nobody knows, Sean. Everybody's still wondering what the total vote count is, especially down in Broward. Palm Beach, we had Susan Booker down there and her staff yesterday saying that, like, these questions were all about demographics, which is a dog whistle to the left, because Palm Beach County has large minority populations, that somehow questioning them was racist. That says to me that I don't know. Listen, I'm not alleging that they're filling out ballots, because I don't know that. Of course, I would not say that.
Well, there's a criminal investigation. I had Pam Bondi on Hannity last night. Pam Bondi, and we know now a criminal investigation is ongoing. That means, and they're looking, if anybody has any information, to send it on over to the Attorney General's office or local police. So that will be determined, and I'm not making that accusation either. But it just, when you look at the history, 2000, 2004, 12, 14, 16, 17, and 18, we have problems.
Yeah.
But only with one or two counties.
Oh, sorry. Yes, and there, by the way, there is evidence. I neglected to mention. There is evidence in the left-leaning Politico, you all can read the article yourself, that there is election malfeasance going on. They just broke something today that the Florida Democrat Party was sending out something about cure affidavits. In other words, if you filled out a voter ballot wrong, they can tell you, hey, come back in and fix this. That the Democrat Party may have been telling people the wrong date. They could still come in after the fact to fix these things. So there is evidence that things are going
well. It's more than that. Rejected provisional ballots, we know, were mixed in with real ballots. And so it's either a matter that they're going to determine this during the hand recount, which will take some time, or they
and
that
Sean,
means
think about this. We have 67 counties down here, right? The counties that have been through a Category 4 hurricane got it right. I can't say this enough. They had one job. You had one darn job. Count the votes. That your job is to go on the air and create conservative content. You don't show up, you don't have a job. Your job as Brenda Snipes and Susan Booker was to count the darn votes. How do you screw this up? This is one of those, like, I'm scratching my head, like, how are they still employed right now? You only had one job. So this is unforgivable right now, and it's really a black eye on those two counties.
Let me go to another issue, because I want to get to, and we've been talking about today, and that is this caravan. And, you know, a few hundred were able to now make it in spite of everybody saying they're not going to be invading. What the fear, let me be very clear about this. What we saw at the southern Mexico border when people charged through a fence, broke it down, walked right over police and security that were there in their own border patrol in Mexico. Well, the president was saying he doesn't want that to happen here. And we've had estimates anywhere between 5,000 and 7,000 and 15,000 people. Anyway, so the first couple of hundred now have made it to the border and in Tijuana. We'll have the video on Hannity tonight. And we're watching the people there. And I'm just wondering, even if they go through a port of entry, as they, I guess, are being told, and don't enter illegally, but they apply for asylum, how many asylum seekers are we going to be able to take in?
Yeah, Sean, we're bureaucratically limited. And here's what the media is not talking about, because they instantly it's incredible on the illegal immigration and immigration arguments in general. It's always spoken about in context of the penalty on the people coming here legally or illegally, but never the penalty for us. One of the things they're leaving out of this, which I'm getting from my CBP friends, is they said, hey, Dan, I got a few emails on this. They said, you don't understand, all of these assets being reallocated, even if, Sean, and that's a big if, they do it at ports of entry, which would be the process. Many of them are claiming they aren't. Even if they do that, these are Border Patrol assets and other assets that are being allocated there towards points of entry that should be patrolling other areas of the border. The media is conveniently leaving that out because they don't want the American people to know that. We don't have unlimited government resources. This is a zero-sum game, and that conversation is sadly...
My fear has always been, believe it or not, for safety and security of innocent people, probably the 99% that just want a better life. I don't blame them, but we have laws. We are a constitutional republic. We have sovereignty. It's got to be respected. The process, if you want to come here, has got to be done legally. And I don't think that's hard to comply with. I just think that if you have a situation where a lot of people were to charge across the border at once, it is so unpredictably dangerous for everybody. Who wants that? Now, if we did have the wall built, nobody would be in danger of any kind. And that's why I have and continue to support the wall. You can put a door in. You can change the laws. You can do whatever you want at that point. I think vetting people is a smart idea because there are a lot of bad people in the world. And I also think that making sure people that do come here are able to sustain themselves and take care of themselves should be a requirement. And I don't think that the people with the toughest laws against illegal immigration are Mexico. It's so ironic. All right, stay right there. Dan Bongino, by the way, his book is a bestseller, Spygate, former Secret Service agent. All right, as we continue, Dan Bongino is with us. His best-selling book is Spygate. I wonder, you know, I'm looking at this public poll by Monmouth University, and I look at the numbers, and I don't particularly agree with their analysis, but if you're looking straight at the numbers, the president's approval ratings have been remarkably consistent. I mean, and, you know, and he's now around at the high where he's been and approving of the job that he's doing as president. You look at Congress, it's a 23% approval rating. Congress has had a problem. When the Democrats go all in, hate Trump investigation, maybe impeachment, how does that end for them?
Oh, that'd be a disaster. I mean, listen, let's be candid, Sean. We've seen it before. I mean, you were on the radio, I believe, when Republicans went through it with Clinton. Listen, I'm not defending Bill Clinton. Don't take this the wrong way. I'm simply suggesting that American families who take their kids to baseball games and work for a living and put in a few hours overtime so they can take a vacation really don't care about investigations on conspiracy theories like Russian collusion that never happened. And what's interesting, Sean, is they didn't really even seem to care about the Clinton impeachment trial, even though that stuff actually happened. So I'm not here to give the Democrats lessons on how to win, but I can tell you right now, if they invest 2 years in a ridiculous witch hunt Senate impeachment trial on Donald Trump for conspiracy theory phantom collusion, they got another thing coming in the 2020 election. I think Trump should pray for that. It would be the worst thing possible.
Well, maybe Hillary, too, we've been hearing. All right, Dan Bongino, thank you for being with us. Appreciate it. Now that the Russia probe has heated up and, well, it looks like the Mueller probe is also winding down and the president answering questions via, I guess, mail or what do you call it? I guess through his lawyers or written answers versus any type of testimony or subpoena. So we have the answer to that question and much more. We'll continue. Sean Hannity's show. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
The president has to work with people that tell him the truth. And if he hasn't told the truth, it is absolutely essential that that be known. If he has told the truth, he just has to come and say it.
Wow. Yes or no? Subpoena Rod Rosenstein.
If he doesn't show up, subpoena him. If he doesn't show up, hold him in contempt. If he doesn't show up, demand that the president, by definition, make him ineligible to serve.
It's very important. You cannot have the four leaders of Congress, the president of the United States, these five people, and not have the voice of women, especially since women were the majority of the voters, the workers in campaigns, and now part of this glorious victory. When I came to Congress, there were 12 Democratic women. I said, we have to change this. Now we'll have close to 90.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. It's amazing to watch the absolute chaos emerging and the intramural fighting emerging within Democratic ranks. And, you know, I told you about the political story yesterday where Nancy Pelosi is making gender the central part of her bid to reclaim the Speaker's gavel. It's not a fait accompli in her case at all. I think it would look ridiculous if we win back the House, have a pink wave with women and who have brought back to the House, then you're going to elect the leader. And who led the, you're not going to elect the leader who led the way. And Politico's headline is Pelosi warns against ousting a woman, talking about her. And then it gets, then you got the protesting with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in Pelosi's office, right outside of her office, which was pretty amazing. Joining us now, Daryl Issa is with us. Want to talk to him about this and the deep state investigation, which I think will stop under the Democrats. They will try and go Russia-Trump collusion for the next 500 years. But anyway, Congressman, good to have you on the program. Why did you leave? You're one of, what, 44 Republicans retiring?
Well, it was time. You know, when you're reauthorizing your own legislation, you probably should go to do something new. I served for 18 years, and leaving at some time should always be a choice. So I've been nominated to a position in the Trump administration. I'm looking forward to that.
What is the position? How did I miss that?
Oh, it's all right. I need Senate confirmation, so we're probably a ways off. But they want me to head the Trade Development, which is an independent agency that helps promote U.S. products being sold abroad.
Well, good for you. I know that's something that you happen to be personally really, really good at, knowing your business background and acumen. Let me ask you about the Democratic chaos. There is a lot. Number one, they're pushing one thing after another in terms of investigation. Nancy Pelosi's not a done deal. I know that Jim Clyburn, you know, he was upset at people trying to undermine his bid potentially for the number three slot in the House leadership. Then you got Ocasio-Cortez, you know, and in the Senate, you got Sinema, who said she wouldn't vote for Schumer, meeting with Schumer yesterday. I would think that that's probably going to turn around. What do you to make of that chaos and their agenda item, which is just hate Trump?
Well, the one thing they all agree on is investigating Trump. So there's no question that'll go forward, whether it's 80 subpoenas or 80 threats of subpoenas. They're clearly going to open investigations to where you're going to have to number them because you'll run out of letters if you just lettered them. The fact is, though, that Nancy Pelosi is facing an interesting challenge, which is she wants to offer them the exact same lineup that failed them the last time, with the same leadership that my Democratic friends, and I don't say that as an oxymoron, many of these Democrats behind the scenes will tell you how awful her speakership was, and quite frankly, there's a lot more than the 9 or 10 who would like to see some new blood, and also less of the power being concentrated in one person who then takes credit for raising all the money.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, where does the Russia investigation, the deep state investigation, for example, the president had talked before the election about declassifying and releasing the FISA warrant applications. He talked about the Gang of Eight information. He talked about the 302s, which would include notes from Bruce Orr, conversations, Christopher Steele wanting to contact Robert Mueller and his team. Then there are other reports today that this might actually be coming to an end with, I guess, the special counsel agreeing with the president's team, written answers forthcoming or whatever is going to happen there, only on Russia, not on any anything else. Besides that, I mean, should the president release this information before? Well, I guess he could do it anytime, right? Shouldn't it be released, though, before the Democrats take power?
Well, there's no question at all. The president has said that he wants a process for declassifying. And I know that can be frustrating, but the attorney general and other people involved in this, the acting attorney general, they need to go forward and go through this careful analysis of what must be redacted versus the rest of it and get it out there. The president has said he wants it out there. And the only question really is how to make sure that a few small lines are protected for sources and methods, if any. And, the last attorney general clearly didn't hear the president. Hopefully the acting attorney general will.
You know, the Wall Street Journal has a piece out how the media went nuts the other day when the president pointed out California's extremely restrictive environmental laws have turned the state's forests into a fire trap. I forgot the exact number. We had Joe Bastardi, and my producer, Linda, remembered that he had sent a note back in May of this year warning of the dangers of wildfires. because there were, what, some 129 million dead trees in California and kindling, and the weather conditions were ripe for it. Anyway, so the bottom line is the Wall Street Journal saying that it's 130 million trees that died between 2010 and 2017 because of drought and bark and beetle infestation and et cetera. So anyway, their argument was Bastardi's argument, which is the president was right about environmental regulations. In the case of California, one law in particular vetoed by Jerry Brown that wouldn't allow the cutting down of dead trees. And that was a big mistake. What are your thoughts on it? And more importantly, I'm concerned about human life. I think we've lost 50 people. We have a couple of hundred missing, billions of dollars in property damage. I watch this. My heart aches. I lived out in California. I don't know if you know this, for 5 years. And are we going to be able to get these fires out? And then, of course, discuss these issues.
Well, the president was right to say that California has to be more aggressive in preventing fires, because the loss of life, particularly in the Camp Fire fire, is in fact the result of a very fast-moving fire that had unlimited fuel. And the president's right, but, you know, for my entire 18 years in Congress, we've been providing money to California, which they it doesn't go very far, and it doesn't clear very much in the way of this growth. That then leaves us with the kind of fuel that says once a fire starts, it is going to be hopeless to get it under control. And it's a decision by the people of California. There are federal laws, but California is the hardest place to clear any of this underbrush.
Why would there be resistance? I'm trying to understand it. Knowing the when I lived, there's a place called Hope Ranch, which was near the Santa Ynez Mountains. We have Reagan's Ranch not far away. And at the time, I remember I left Santa Barbara, went back to visit once. And I went to this neighborhood. They had a fire in the interim, and the whole place was destroyed. It took my breath away. Now we're having literally, this is happening in the northern part and the southern part of California simultaneously. And why would, if this is the kindling and they're dead, why the argument? And apparently there was even a federal grant to pay for it.
Exactly. We have gotten federal dollars, and it hasn't happened. And the problem is the environmentalist will prioritize every single species being left alone to do what they're doing. And then, of course, when fire wipes out that whole area, then they'll complain about the damage to habitat and the endangered species. But there are two principles that everyone knows in California that get ignored. One of them is, if you leave the dead wood there, eventually you will have a catastrophic fire. The second one is, if you stop private citizens on their own land from properly clearing, because again, you want to have natural habitat, then they will be at risk. Both of those are part of our problem in California. On your own land, you cannot clear in many cases because certain species are protected. And in the public area, vast amounts of you called it kindling, but it's kindling all the way up to massive amounts of wood, are sitting there waiting for a natural occurrence. Fire is natural. Fire out of control because of a buildup is not natural.
All right, Darrell Issa, you know, you did a great job. You were very tough. You're a good chairman. You're fair. I know they're going to miss you. Congrats on your new position. Please know that, and I mean this with all my heart, our prayers are with the people of California. I hope we find these missing people. I hope we can get this fire out. I'm not an expert in forestry. I don't claim to be, but it makes sense if you have 130 million dead trees and you're not allowed to get rid of the underbrush and you can't cut down a dead tree. It doesn't make sense, but, you know, we'll deal with all of this, I'm sure, in the aftermath, but we've got to prevent this.
I mean, absolutely.
Wasn't that Smokey the Bear? I mean, I'm not making light of it because it's so horrible. But all right. Thank you. Appreciate
thank you.
It, Congressman. God bless you. And always good to have you. All right. As we continue, let's get back to our busy telephones here. 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program. All right. David is in North Carolina. Apparently his heart is troubled. All right. Let me see if I can help David. What's the matter? What is wrong with your heart? What can I do for you?
Well, I know you to let your heart not be troubled, but like you said, my heart has been very troubled, especially with the Democrats doing this subpoena cannon in the House, the endless investigations, but I came across five words that let my heart not be troubled, and I want to get in on these five words, which are Trey Gowdy or Attorney General. Which solves
I don't know who the, you know what, I've always liked Trey. At times he surprises me. I'm not sure where he's coming from. I have nothing against him. He's smart as a whip. I don't know what his plans or his future are, but look, let me go back and give some perspective. Bill Clinton's first midterm, 94, Republicans take a hold of Congress for the first time in 40 years. It was massive. 52 House seats, 8 Senate seats. First midterm. He then went on to re-election, okay? Obama lost 6 Senate seats, 63 House seats. Trump picked up 3 Senate seats. It was nowhere near the numbers losses in the House for either Obama or Clinton. It's only happened this way 3 times in 100 years. That's called perspective. The other perspective is, you know something? The American people are a resilient group. This is what's funny about, like, it's going to be, there's a good side of this, it's going to be so entertaining to watch the wacky, insane, radical left pull their shenanigans. I guarantee you, with 100% accuracy, they're going to overreach, they're going to misinterpret what happened in this election, and they're going to destroy all their credibility. And it's going to boomerang right back on them. By the way, and I was right on the boomerang, the only Russia collusion so far we have is Hillary and the phony dossier. You know, there are more important things in life. You got your family, your health, your friends. Our fight for this country, you know, I'd like to say that there's, oh, okay, we're good now. It never ends. It's a battle. There are people that have a very different ideology than we do, say. And it's our job to just fight every day. And you know what? What have we proven? Obama failed. Trump's conservative policies are working. So I think the American people are going to see that, don't you?
I do see that, but I think there's a part of it where Trey Gowdy can actually bring trust and back to the FBI and DOJ, and we can get to the bottom of what happened to those 33,000 emails, maybe get to the bottom of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page.
If not him, remember the DOJ Office of Legal Counsel issued an opinion backing Matt Whitaker as the acting attorney general. I told you that was going to happen. Greg Jarrett told you, and everybody else was wrong. And I'm just telling you, we'll find somebody. I would think the president will get that right. That's my guess. Quick break. All right, we'll come back. We'll continue. 800-941-SEAN. Amazing Hannity tonight. Tell you about that in a second as we continue.
You have to make sure it doesn't get lost. That's really the first priority for us. It's the reason people voted to put us in the majority, is to put forward a positive agenda. And, you know, let's face it, the investigations are sexy. They're interesting. You bring witnesses before the Kleeglites, people tune in. Mm-hmm. The legislative process is less so. It's much less dramatic. But nonetheless, in terms of importance to the American people, making sure that they can provide for their families, that they can get health care, they can keep their health care, that has to be priority number one. But we are going to need to ruthlessly prioritize on the Intel Committee, which investigative threads we go down, but among the committees also, and we've already started that process.
All right, there's Shifty Schiff, who I think is like the biggest liar in the, all of Congress. Anyway, a lot of developments. It's been a while now. We've been obviously busy with the Kavanaugh hearings. We've been busy with the election. We are busy with the recounts. We're busy with a lot of different things. By the way, news roundup, information overload hour. We're going to get to your calls. Final half hour, promise. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. We now have counted some 100 investigations, subpoenas, that Democrats, as this is all, everything they hid during the election, this midterm, now is rolling out there pretty much like we said it would, which was really makes it really does highlight the importance of the president going out, fighting so hard, picking up Senate seats in North Dakota, Indiana, Missouri, Florida. It makes a big difference. It makes a huge difference, as a matter of fact, because, and then not losing as many seats in the midterm as, say, Clinton did in his first midterm or Obama in his first midterm, because this is all they've got. This is all they seem to get. Jerry Nadler announcing an investigation into Trump's criticism of the Russiagate probe. The same people that are saying, well, Jim Acosta has a First Amendment right. This is what the media is saying. I'm like, well, doesn't the president have a First Amendment right? I didn't know it was a constitutional right to actually be in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And when the president answers your question and says enough and you decide not to abide by it, I didn't know that was the right. And I don't believe in the claim that this is a journalist that's, well, he identifies as a journalist. Well, all right, fair. I'll take that. Well, I do journalism, too. We do. I can produce hours and hours of radio and TV programs, straight news, absolute straight news, no opinion. But I also say that I do opinion. I'm also out there and honest. I'm a conservative. They just claim they're journalists, which means they wouldn't be giving opinion. And in the whole context of that, Jim Acosta was giving his opinion. But I don't want to get digress here. This is what we're going to get. And it's, we now also have heard that the president apparently is or could or will be or has now written answers to the Russian probe only about Russia. And anyway, so Michael Caputo is with us. He's a Republican strategist in all this. He's been targeted by the left for his associations with the president. And welcome, sir, to the program. Glad you're with us. What's your reaction to the now after, what, 18 months? Now we want to go another 2 years, Trump-Russia collusion?
Yeah, I'm ready for it, I guess. I'm going to be dragged into that jackpot again. We all of us knew it. You talked about it on the air every day about, you know, we were going to have the president impeached if the Democrats took over the House. We were going to see the reopening of the Russia investigation, whether there's anything there or not. That's where we're going. It looks like the new chairman, Schiff, is going to be calling all of us back in again to ask the same questions again, to get the same answers again. And to charge all of us astronomical legal fees again, every single one of us, myself and Commander J.D. Gordon, they're circling around Roger Stone as well. We're all headed back to the House of Representatives for yet another replay of the bogus Russia investigation.
Well, you know, the amazing thing to me, and I still, you know, I think it is such a glaring example of pure and utter complete hypocrisy of both the media and the Democrats, especially in light of Hillary Clinton, exonerated without being investigated. We have a dual justice system. Then, of course, the whole Russia probe begins, started by the same people that think that, well, 100 to 1, 100 million to 1, nothing, I think that Hillary should win. And obvious bias against Donald Trump. But then again, she pays for a dossier through funneled money through a law firm to a group, an op research group, to a foreign national. Russian lies, never verified or corroborated, but it was propagated before the election in 2016. Why? To hurt Trump. Lies, Russian lies paid for to influence the election and the electorate. And then also a fraud committed on a FISA court, and then through circular reporting, then used to ignite the push to get the special counsel. And that happened. But so far, you know, what do we get? We get, okay, you lied on a loan application. You didn't pay your taxes. I mean, and then indicting people that you know you're never going to get to the United States, and even indicting people for lying and making deals with Michael Flynn. And neither of the FBI agents that interviewed him thought in any way that he did anything wrong. That's where we're headed back to?
That's where we're headed back to, of course. And you've been talking about this before. Jeannie Rhee, this longtime Clinton
Jeannie
legal
Rhee, yeah,
leader,
yeah.
She's now in charge of the investigation and prosecution of the president's longtime advisor, Roger Stone. Let's just face it. There's no more illusions here. All the disguises are off. We've got a longtime Hillary Clinton hitter coming out to go after Roger Stone. She was seen in the grand jury room by Stone's lawyer, Tyler Nixon, when he was testifying recently. You talked about this all the time on the air. Ree's in charge of the Stone investigation. She donated, what, $16,000 to the Democrats, defended the Clinton Foundation in a racketeering lawsuit, defended Hillary Clinton in a 2015 lawsuit that sought access to her private emails, and those emails are at the center of this entire investigation. Let's just say it. All the disguises are off. This is political at its core.
Well, I guess the question to me is, you know, at what point does somebody say you can't bankrupt all these American people if you're going to be asking the same, answering the same questions over and over again? You know, General Flynn, one of the reasons I don't think a lot of people know that he had to, you know, cop this plea when neither of the people involved supported or thought he was lying is because he was a military guy, 30 years of service. Now, when you work in this in those types of service jobs that you want to serve other people, you forego a lot more money in the private sector. I think teachers often do that and are often underpaid. Policemen often do that to serve, often underpaid. Firemen, same thing. Now the guy's faced with, well, I got to take a mortgage out of my house or I'm going to lose my house and I just can't afford to fight anymore. And a lot of people end up in that situation. It is expensive. If I asked you how much you paid, there were people that worked for Donald Trump, I'm sure, that paid more money in lawyers than they actually did in terms of what they were getting paid. They worked for free or paid to work in the White House. Who's going to ever want to do that job?
Well, I never made a nickel off the Trump campaign. And I'll tell you, look at Commander J.D. Gordon, who was the national security advisor to the president during the campaign. He's been in front of more. I've been in front of the Senate, the House, the Mueller team. He's been in front of more committees than I have. And we understand he's going back in front of the House Intelligence Committee because Representative Schiff needs some more camera time. Commander Gordon, he's living on a military pension. I mean, a lot of people that are caught up in this jackpot are just middle class people. I live in a little village, Sean, right outside of Buffalo, New York. We have cobblestone streets. My office is above the shoe repair parlor. I make Buffalo money, and I've got deep into six figures of legal fees. And Roger Stone, he isn't a part of this administration. He never made a nickel off of the campaign, and he's going to have over $1 million in legal fees when Jeannie Ree, the Clinton hitter, finally brings
him in. By the way, he said to me, in spite of people's perceptions, he's not a wealthy guy. It's like the Martha Stewart syndrome. If you can't get somebody on the underlying crime, you get him for lying to the FBI. Well, then the advice for anybody has to be never talk to the FBI, because if you do and you don't legitimately don't remember something, and if they want to get you, they'll just say, well, this text from 400 years ago says that you did say that. You're done. And then at that point, then you're in legal jeopardy, which would go against the instincts of good Americans that would want to help the FBI. I want to help the FBI. My whole family's from law enforcement.
Well, it's true, Sean. It's a perjury trap, as they say. I didn't want to believe that in the weeks leading up to my time in front of the Mueller team. But, you know, George Papadopoulos, his country failed him. It really did. And his name has become a verb. They tried to Papadopoulos me. And it looks like they Papadopoulos Jerry Corsi. I mean, Papadopoulos was given information by an FBI cutout, this guy, Dr. Mifsud, about allegations that Russians had Hillary emailed.
He tweeted out, by the way, that this guy is going to come and tell a very different story. Did you
Absolutely.
See that? He's on my show tonight on Hannity. You're giving away my secrets. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to do that. But, you know, Papadopoulos was asked a simple question about when he heard something, whether it was, whether he was on the Trump campaign when he said it or not. And he didn't recall exactly what day it was. And they accused him of lying to the FBI because of that. They did the same thing to me, by the way, during my interview with the Mueller investigation, trying to trip me up on a date that they already knew because they sent an FBI informant to me.
You know, I don't know Roger well, but I've watched and I've seen him over the years. You know, Roger likes to play mind games all the time with people. I just don't know what they're looking at because I'm not there. But explain to this audience, you got called in how many times, and explain what happened.
Well, I've been calling in front of the House Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and the Mueller investigation. I got called in once.
Let's talk about the Mueller investigation. Who was in the room? How many people? And how was it?
I had one prosecutor, one investigator, and two FBI agents, one on either side of the prosecutor. His name is Zelensky, young fella. And then me and my attorney, Dennis Vacco of Lippis Mathis, who was the attorney general of New York State. And they told me to not expect to go out to dinner. We were going to have a long, long day. We came in at noon. I went in there, sat down with them, was completely forthcoming. And at one point, they asked me about whether a Russian had ever come to me and offered me information about Hillary Clinton. And I said, yes. In fact, it happened once. And this guy came to me, and I sent him over to Roger, and Roger rebuffed him. And at that point, they tried to get me nailed down on when that conversation happened. An immaterial telephone call I had, 45 seconds at length at the most, and they tried to nail down what date that was, something I hadn't even thought of in over a year. And by telling me what date, they knew because they had Roger Stone's text messages. They knew exactly when it happened. They tried to trip me up and tell me that I lied to them about when that conversation took place. My attorney, Dennis Vacco, looked at them and said, gentlemen, my client is being completely forthcoming here. I think you need to move along. And there was a pregnant pause, and they moved along. And then, of course, expecting 6 hours.
By the way, if you asked me who was on my program last Thursday, I couldn't tell you in a million years.
Absolutely.
Now, if you ask me about Obama's record or Reagan's record, I can give you verse and chapter. I don't know what that says about my. I mean, there's so many texts, and I couldn't imagine having to remember a date on anything. All right, we're going to take a quick break. More with Michael Caputo on the other side. And your calls at the bottom of the hour. An amazing Hannity tonight. Speaking of Papadopoulos, he will join us, among others. And, of course, the latest on the recount and the Democratic infighting is actually getting entertaining. 9 Eastern on Fox. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. We'll continue. Michael Caputo is with us. He's a Republican strategist in all this. He's been targeted by the left for his associations with the president.
And here's the thing. Yeah, they're coming to the dead-end alleyway of the Russia collusion delusion. And at the end of that alleyway stands Roger Stone, who they believe coordinated in some way with the Russians and the Trump campaign. And there's absolutely zero proof of it. So they're trying to trip up Jerome Corsi through this, probably it looks like some kind of a perjury trap to get him to say what they need someone, anyone, to say about Roger Stone so they can haul him in.
I got to run, but I will say the last thing. There are some really good prosecutors. They get some really bad people. It's unnerving in the United States, especially when you consider all of the Clinton dossier issues, which we're going to get back into in very big detail soon. And all the corruption that took place. But when, you know, we always hear prosecutorial discretion. The ones that do that are smart. But if you're out there just to trap people, that is such a scary scenario, abuse of power to me. And what you're describing sounds like it. But I got to run. Michael Caputo, thank you.
People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally. The
president's decision to end DACA was heartless and it was brainless.
When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration.
Hundreds of thousands of families will be ripped apart.
If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong.
Tens of thousands of American businesses will lose hardworking employees.
And the argument there, Mr. President, is Americans don't want to do the work. We just can't find American workers to do the work. Mr. President, that is a crock in many instances. It's just not true.
In my view, Trump's decision to end the DACA program was some 800,000 young people is the cruelest and most ugly presidential act in the modern history of this country. I cannot think of one single act which is uglier and more cruel.
We've got to do several things, and I am, you know, adamantly against illegal immigrants. People have to stop employing illegal immigrants. Come up to Westchester, go to Suffolk and Nassau counties, stand in the street corners in Brooklyn or the Bronx. You're going to see loads of people waiting to get picked up to go do yard work and construction work and domestic work. You know, this is not a problem that the people who are coming into the country are solely responsible for. They wouldn't be coming if we didn't put them to work.
My proposal will keep families together, and it will include a path to citizenship.
The number of immigrants added to the labor force every year is of a magnitude not seen in this country for over a century. If this huge influx of mostly low-skill workers provides some benefits to the economy as a whole, it also threatens to depress further the wages of blue-collar Americans and puts strains on an already overburdened safety net.
Immigrants aren't the principal reason wages haven't gone up.
There are those in the immigrants' rights community who have argued passionately that we should simply provide those who are illegally with legal status, or at least ignore the laws on the books and put an end to deportation until we have better laws. But I believe such an indiscriminate approach would be both unwise and unfair. It would suggest to those thinking about coming here illegally that there will be no repercussions for such a decision. And this could lead to a surge in more illegal immigration. These are students, they're teachers, they're doctors, they're lawyers. They're Americans in every way, but on paper.
Those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law. We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants.
Real reform means establishing a responsible pathway to earned citizenship.
Oh, they all sound like Donald Trump. Amazing how people change and how politics shifts over the years, all for political expediency. All right, glad you're with us. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. I mean, that is such a devastating... Yeah, you look at the approval of Congress here. Do you approve or disapprove of the job the Congress is doing? 63% disapprove. 23% approval. That's pretty bad if you're in Congress. They've earned it, though. And it's all of them. You know, even, look, Republicans, had they not retired in the House, so many of them, some 44 of them, if they had done more, I'm telling you, they would have done better. I'm not saying they 100%, but it's obvious when you, it's great politics to actually fulfill promises and improve things for the American people. That just is great politics. Those people, they want to cling to power as much as they do. Their ambition is blind. They love being called senator or congressman or governor, and they love the prestige aspect of it. But then all of a sudden, they're like, they really like it so much, they don't want to take any chances anymore. Well, I'm not so sure if I really meant what I said on the campaign trail. Or what we discovered so often in this campaign is the Democrats just they didn't want to talk about immigration. They don't want to admit their open borders that they support. They don't want to admit the sanctuary cities they support or the sanctuary states. They don't want to admit, you know, now Andrew Cuomo in New York, for example, well, I'd support driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. Well, I didn't hear that a week and a half ago from him. It is what it is. It's why people have such a low opinion of people in the political world. They earn it. They earn it every day. And it's just fascinating to watch this. All right, let's get to our busy telephones. Ryan is in New York. Ryan, hi, how are you? Glad you called. Welcome to the Sean Hannity Show.
Thank you, Sean. Sean, I am very upset about this caravan coming across the fence is what it was. They were hopping over about 300 of them. And I just don't understand what Kirstjen Nielsen is doing as Secretary of Homeland Security. She's, you know, we don't have our tents sitting up. We don't have the military working to build the wall. And I don't really know how you stop this caravan of people unless you stop it in Mexico and send troops to Mexico. I just do any leadership coming from Kristen Nielsen.
I'm not sure who to blame. I really am not. You know, at this point, I think she's done everything she could do in terms of reaching out to her Mexican counterparts and people down there. You know, I'm certain that certain things that they worked on, for example, which happened as we now see a couple of hundred have reached the border and apparently in Tijuana, Mexico, with the United States, and they were sitting on fences. I saw the video being played on Fox throughout the day today, and I'm watching it. But I got to tell you, I don't know the answer. There's got to be a plan. Secretary Mattis down there today was very clear that he's not authorizing the military to be the border patrol down at the border. My guess, my assumption is that they are there, God forbid, if needed, if there was any type of situation where thousands of people at once just wanted to rush into the country, which would be extraordinarily dangerous for everybody on both sides, which is why for the safety, security of all people, I think it's good for America to have that border wall put up. I mean, we know the lessons about human trafficking, drug trafficking, and now it's sort of like when you have that many people that are saying they want to not obey American law, respect our sovereignty, our borders, and they just want to defy it. It gets very complicated if it becomes a showdown. And again, I'll assume that 99% of people are here or in that caravan because they've been told they're going to have a better life in America and they'll be able to live there, where there's hope and opportunity and liberty and freedom and all the things we probably take for granted. But then we have the identification between Mexico and the United States of 300 people that have mixed themselves among the thousands in the caravan that are not good people. And that should scare every American. We don't know anything about them, what their intentions are, what their backgrounds are. And that's a problem. Somehow, some way, I will say this, Trump is a man of his word. And if he says he's not going to let them in, I don't think he's going to let them in. Now, what the liberal courts do, you never know. That's a whole different ballgame from my perspective. Anyway, Ryan, thank you. Appreciate it. On the same topic, Patsy in Louisiana. Patsy, hi. How are you? Glad you called. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. And thank you for all you do for our military.
Oh,
I have a son that's done 3 tours in the Middle East. But I'm so ticked off about this caravan. How can these people say they're coming here for asylum while they're traveling the road to get here? They're burning the American flag. I believe that this bunch of, well, I don't know what to call them even, but they were organized and well-paid to make that trip, and they had a lot of help along the way.
I think it was Vice President Pence that said that there was support among, I don't know, different groups in Venezuela and elsewhere. I just haven't seen the evidence of it, but that was stated by the vice president. I've always found him to be an honorable guy. It just, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. America's got to decide. Are we a nation of laws? Are we a nation that believes in sovereignty, in our Constitution, the rule of law, application of laws? Or we're not. I mean, we're faced with this question on so many different issues, you know, whether it's Hillary Clinton or the phony Russia issue. But we'll ignore the Hillary Russian paid for dossier that was used to commit a fraud on a FISA court or whatever it happens to be. Or the Democrats, you know, as I played at the beginning of the segment, they had one position on immigration. Then they switch it. They just change it. And they do it for political expediency. And that, obviously, a decision's been made. They think politically for their own benefit. This is good for them and their party, probably long term. So therefore, the things that they said, you know, not even that long ago during the Obama years about immigration that sound just like Donald Trump. And then they turn around and say Trump's policies are racist. I'm like, OK, that makes my head spin. And the media will never call them out on it, but we do. I mean, that's kind of what we all do. Anyway, thank you. Appreciate it. Jody is in Weston, Florida, the home of the recount. Maybe you ought to call Florida instead of the Sunshine State, the recount state. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you? Love your show.
Good. Thank you.
Actually, I live in Weston, but we're here at Brenda Snipes' office in Lauderhill.
Right now?
Yes, right now. We've been here every single day because of all the problems that they've incurred with the counting and bringing in more ballots daily, even after the deadline. So we were just a few of us who were watching and filming another truck backing up a couple of days ago, and I filmed it. And we wanted to see what they were going to empty out of this truck. They backed it really close up to the warehouse, so we couldn't see what they were going to be taking out of the truck.
Well, that's what it sounds like, by the way, what Matt Gaetz did. Were you thrown out of there as well?
No, we were not. We didn't go where he was, but we were here the day he was here, the first day, which was last Friday, after they tried to steal the election from us. So we've been here every single day since then. But what happened was we couldn't see anything that was going on when the truck backed up. So a few of us went out there with our phones to try to film what was going on. And lo and behold, we found these tags, registered ballot box ties. With numbers on them. I've got a gentleman in the car with me right now who used to work with SOE. We're sitting in a private car right now having a private conversation with you.
Here's my main question to you. Have you turned all of this over to law enforcement? We know now Pam Bondi, law enforcement of Florida, they are doing a criminal investigation.
Pam Bondi is aware of it. FBI is.
And we have an attorney.
How many people are in this car, by the way? Well, all right, I hope we have, beer in the car and a little bit of fun in the car. Listen, here's the thing, and I've had long discussions with Gaetz and some other people. My advice is, if you have anything like this, first of all, it shows what great concern Floridians, Americans, patriots you would be to take your time out of your day to ensure the integrity of the process, as there's no doubt there has been so much that has gone on behind the scenes that they don't want us to know. And I would just say two things. Get it to law enforcement. If you have things that you think will be helpful, evidence, whatever, get it to law enforcement. Another thing I'll say is, as conservatives, I think this is important. We saw what happened to Tucker and Pam Bondi and Secretary Nielsen and Sarah Sanders and Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz and his wife Heidi. If you're gonna be there, I just urge conservatives, just be respectful. Does that make sense? I don't want us to be like them. As Maxine Waters gives out orders, follow them. You create a crowd and you get in their face, as Spartacus says, but you get a crowd and then you follow them into department stores, et cetera. Little scary stuff. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. All right, loaded up tonight, we've got Lindsey Graham, Pam Bondi, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, George Papadopoulos, and Austin Goolsbee. We're loaded up tonight in an important monologue. 9 Eastern, Hannity. Hope you set your DVR. And we'll see you tonight at 9. We will be back here tomorrow. Thank you for being with us.